is Scuba Go-Go
Under the Sea, the podcast for the inquisitive diver.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Scuba Goat Podcast, your ultimate destination for all things related to scuba diving and the ocean. Today, I am joined by two incredible local women who share a common passion for exploring the underwater world and displaying it through their lenses. These ladies not only pursue their independent projects, but have also collaborated to form Liquid Lens, an initiative that aims to empower and inspire women divers to showcase their underwater photography skills. Now, I'm super excited to have them on the show and to share their journey as scuba divers and professional photographers. So, without further ado, let's dive right in. Cheers, ladies.
Cheers.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for inviting us.
Thank you.
I can't believe I'm cheers in with water.
I know, it's bad luck.
I'm not drinking the water. On a serious note, welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you.
Good, good. So we better let these nice people who are listening know who we've got in the studio. So why don't we go from left to right?
Your left.
Yeah, go for it.
I'm Vanessa. I'm underwater photographer, Vanessa Torres Macho is how people know me, and I own an underwater photography store in Bondi, in Dive Center Bondi.
And I'm Talia Grace, and serious hobbyist when it comes to underwater photography, and yeah, loving it.
Happy days. And we've had a few photographers on the show now, and, you know, especially people like Don Silcock, who comes in, has 15 beers, gets pissed and talks about photographs all over the world. But unfortunately, I missed the display that you ladies put on in the, was it a cafe in, was it in Bondi?
It was, no, that's Waverly, right? Or it's,
Waverly. Waverly.
Bellagio Cafe.
Yeah, yeah.
From, owned by Alex, who actually, she's a dive instructor, used to work in Dive Center Bondi as well.
Yeah.
Helped build the biggest or the deepest pool in Dubai as well. So,
oh, he was on that, was he?
Yeah. She was there for five or six years. Sorry. She, Alex, yeah. Mm. Crazy German Alex, yeah.
Yeah. You're going to regret that.
Yeah, just know I didn't say that, Alex.
Yeah.
But I did almost call you a bloke.
Yeah.
yeah, no, I got, you see, seen that there? I ended up with I got an infection and ended up in A&E. So I think you and Ivy had communicated, and I said I was going to head down and have a look at the display that weekend. And I ended up in A&E getting surgery.
Oh,
so that was me out of the water for a few weeks and sitting at home doing next to bugger all.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
So am I. I was looking forward to seeing that display.
It went really well. So.
It did.
We missed tons of people because there were so many people that we didn't end up seeing everyone, or at least I didn't.
Yeah. There might be another one down the track.
Exactly.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. And that was up for a month?
So the opening, was one day, and then we...
No, 2 months.
And then it stayed open for 2 months.
For two months?
Yeah.
Fucking hell. Good on you.
Yeah.
Good on you. And just thinking back to Oztech, I know you had some photos on display, Vanessa. You won a few, didn't you?
Yeah, so it was due to the Oztech competition, which is so far the only one that I enter. That's something we can talk later.
We really had to push her into it. Yeah,
really?
Yeah. Oh, she could nail so many underwater photography competitions, but she just
The pressure.
So I pushed her into that one a little bit. It took a bit of convincing, but yeah, she did well.
So you had shots in there as well?
No, I got shortlisted and... Yeah, she.
Oh, no, she beat you.
Oh, of course she did. Of course she did. That's Vanessa.
No, yeah. Good on you.
Yeah. Yeah, and had the stall as well.
So. Yes.
Yeah.
I was running around with the microphones.
Yeah, I remember, and you
I
were going to come
you.
And. Yeah, I know. It was just crazy.
I came to the stall like 5 times, and you were off talking to someone.
Well, we were the only underwater photography store there, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was a good show for you then.
Yeah, it was fun. And I also managed to do my first ever like real workshop for other unknown people. So
yeah.
I was very, very happy with the weekend. So thank you, Sue.
Yeah, Sue has sat exactly where you are right now.
Did she?
Yeah.
Thank you, Sue Crow.
She does a marvelous job.
Mm-hmm.
Really
she does.
Yeah. Mm. Hey, let's back it up a little bit. And in fact, let's back it up a lot and find out how you guys not only got behind the camera, but also ended up underwater.
Mm-hmm.
So who wants to start first?
You go, Talia.
Yeah, me? Okay. Yeah. So I actually got my dive ticket pretty late. It would have been 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And my ex-boyfriend bought it for me. So something good came out of that.
We have that
right?
in common.
Right? There you go. Wow. So, yeah. So that got me into it and then, you know, became a holiday diver like most people do, you know, not taking it too seriously. And then I hit Ningaloo Reef with my mum and I had nothing but a GoPro. And that's sort of when the penny dropped and I was like, okay, this GoPro 7's great, but it's really not going to get me what I want. So I think I need to bite the bullet and invest in a bit of a system and just spiraled from there. And that's how I got into photography and it's been nonstop.
So that was 7 years ago?
No, so that would have been 4 years ago.
So you, okay, so you started diving and then three years later changed up to
underwater
a bigger system?
Photography, yep.
And you're now shooting on, what camera are you on?
So it's a Nikon D850.
Oh, you're not.
Great camera.
Another fucking Nikon. Are you a Nikon as well?
No.
For that.
The enemy.
Yeah.
No. I love Nikon.
I get grief from Nikon. Don. Don's a Nikon lover.
You know.
Love Nikon.
But happy days.
Nikon 850. And you're in a Nauticam housing?
Isotta. It's the only way to go. Just saying.
Thank you, Thalia.
Yeah, right. Actually, that's how me and Vanessa met because she's my supplier.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
But a supplier in a good way, not in a bad way.
Yeah. Well, you know, she takes all my money, but.
Yeah, exactly. I know what you're thinking about, but it's not that type
of
money.
Yeah, not that kind of, Yeah.
And how about you, Vanessa? How did you get into diving?
Yeah, it's funny. She said GoPro 7. When I started diving, it was GoPro Mac 1. So, yeah, mine is a little bit longer. So I actually started scuba diving in the pool when I was 7 with my dad. He grew up here in Australia and he took back home all tanks and whatever. But anyways, my real diving started exactly 20 years ago. Exactly the same thing. My boyfriend bought it for me and not very keen on it. You know, I was like, yeah, okay, whatever, let's do it. Mm. And then absolutely loved it. The first few years, you know, first 3 years, I was not as keen as Thalia. You know, I think in the first 3 years, I did 25 dives or something like that.
Oh, nothing.
Nothing, yeah.
Wow.
And then I became an instructor in 2006. And since then, I've been working in the dive industry. I was, for the first 10 years, just mainly scuba instructor, managing dive centers. I met my partner in Mexico in 2008. Mm. He's an instructor as well, and we worked, you know, all over the place. And it was when I was in Egypt, when we were working in the liverboards, that I started seeing all of these people, you know, carrying these massive cameras and thinking, you know, I would love to do that, but yeah, it's never going to be me.
Yeah.
Too complicated, too difficult. I'm never going to be good at it. And it's only when I got to Australia that I used to work in coastal water dive in Western Australia, and we had a very good we could get stuff cheaper from Olympus, and that's how I got started through Olympus. And yeah, that was 2011, and yeah, so 12 years ago. And for me, it's been great because, you know, I've kind of evolved from being an instructor. You can get a little bit, I don't want to say bored, but, you know, doing the same thing all the time. So when I picked up the camera, it's given me a new lease in life, if that makes sense. And yeah.
It's 100%. I mean, that's one of the reasons I moved away from teaching.
Mm.
I just got bored to fuck with it.
I still love it. But, you know, doing open water courses every single, well, at least 2 or 3 times per week, it can, you know, get a little bit more boring, even though I love teaching. But so now I only teach underwater photography, or if I need to teach people, it's in very specific, as in teaching diving, it's in very specific situations.
Yeah. I mean, I think personally I would teach again now that I've had a break away from it, because it was the monotony, like you say, of just doing it the same old thing every single day. And people think, oh, it's fantastic. You live in the dream. You live on a beach. You go diving. You have a beer in the afternoon and the evening. Then you get up and do it all again. Yes, you do. But you don't see the environment you're in because you're constantly doing the same routine and rigmarole. And it does become boring.
Well, yeah, and Sydney is a little bit different because I've worked in tons of tropical places where you do get that tropical feeling, but Sydney is not a tropical place, so it's, you still have traffic, you know. Anyways, I still love it. You know, being in the dive industry for me is It gives me the field. So
And your what cameras are you shooting on then?
I'm actually shooting in a Micro Four Thirds in an Olympus, and I've been shooting. Well, this is my third camera since then. Isota as well. That funnily enough, just because I'm shooting with Isota, got me to where I am right now as a business owner. But I'm just about to make the jump to Sony.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why Sony?
Just because of, I don't want to get boringly technical, just the autofocus is fantastic and the brilliant cameras. And yeah, I could have gone for Canon, Nikon. It just happened to be that I had to settle for something. I've made my decision. So Sony it is.
Hey, and look, we're going to be talking about photography. Don't give a toss about getting too technical. If anyone's listening to this, they're going to be listening because of photography. So they want to know that shit.
As I always tell my students, it is not the racket that plays tennis. It's the monkey.
Very true.
So it doesn't really matter what you have.
Yeah, indeed. So you're working in the business. You're working in diving. Mm-hmm. Talia, you're...
She's
not in the industry
working
at the moment.
It's a labor of love for me.
Are you getting there? Are you going to be doing a jump? Or?
I'm just sort of taking it as it comes. You know, Vanessa's heard me say this a million times. You know, you got to trust the process, which is what I'm doing right now. It's a world of failure in the, especially in the underwater photography industry, as far as, you know, making it. So I'm just taking it one step at a time, trying to get the ball rolling, and it's slowly, slowly happening, but it takes time, and you just need to be prepared.
I'm just going to say one thing. I'm going to interrupt. She's a brilliant photographer.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, same story. Like,
I always say she tells everyone this.
But because it's true, she's absolutely brilliant in photography. Yeah.
Do you scroll through and see photos? Like, do you see those photos from Daniel Sly from the weekend?
I did, yeah.
From the dives that we were all on?
Yeah.
And I looked at it, I thought, yeah, I got two, maybe three reasonable shots out of the dive.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Dan puts those up. I'm like, fucking hell. That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Did you get any?
I didn't take a camera that day, actually.
No way.
Yeah, yeah.
I heard that. Unbelievable.
You know what? Sometimes it's good to go without a camera just to...
No.
I know. It's a rarity. It's a rarity. But it does happen. And sometimes you just got to absorb the dive. And there's certain sites that I would never go to without a camera. But... off a boat in Sydney when the viz isn't doing too much for you.
Never.
Look, it was whale season.
Never.
Maybe I would, you know, but.
Yeah, they told me and I thought, who is this person?
I was happy I didn't. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. Did she tell you that we had to go and pick her up as well?
Oh, stop it.
Ooh.
She didn't tell you, did she?
We weren't that far off.
Oh, yeah, it's only about half a kilometre off the dive site.
Luciano pointed us in the wrong direction.
Also blaming it on poor
Totally,
Jen.
It's all his fault. Oh, all his fault. Look, I normally do that as a shore dive, and I know it backwards, but jumping off a boat and starting in the middle, it was hard.
Yeah, yeah, so. Which made it backwards, so you ended up in the wrong fucking place.
Well, exactly. Luciano's fault, just saying.
Blame it on the Italian.
Oh, yeah. Happy days.
Yeah, indeed. So what's going forward? What's the plan? What's the master plan?
Yeah, well, excuse me. The master plan is that I clearly need a second person to be able to do everything that I want to do at my store. But
a second Vanessa.
A second Vanessa. Yeah. I think that more exploration if possible. Trying to get my partner back in the business as well. Thank you, Rick. You're very supportive. And just try to grow this dive community. Well, I don't want to say dive community, but this women underwater photography community around Sydney. And just get more stuff happening, because I know that it's very easy to start in underwater photography, but it's very easy to get stale.
Yeah.
You know, so... just Talia and I masterminding the thing, yeah.
Okay, you're being very elusive right now. Let's nail it down. What the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, the thing is called Liquid Lens. Yeah. Okay. Put that out there.
Okay.
Super
let's,
important.
Let's talk about Liquid Lens. What is Liquid Lens? What's it all about?
You want to go?
It's essentially something we started how long ago now?
So I think it was October 2021.
Right, okay.
So it was a year and a half ago.
Yeah, and it's essentially championing women in water photography, mm-hmm. just sort of creating a platform for them to be showcased and seen and heard. And yeah, it's been really good to see what's come of it and how the women have been so supportive and gotten involved. And it's just good to see content from them because there are some people who are super quiet in the community and then you see what they're able to bring forward and you're like, wow, you know?
Yeah, and just clarifying that we're not excluding others. We're just trying to push an area that lacks a little bit more, maybe, I don't know, I don't want to say motivation because it's not, or maybe just putting stuff out there and not being afraid because, you know, I suffer from imposter syndrome tremendously, but just, you know, valuing what you do. And the only way that you can improve is by putting yourself out there and just, you know, I have this saying, or I once heard a rabbi saying that the only way that you need to be like a lobster. So
a lobster.
A lobster, yeah.
Which is funny because it's not kosher, but...
It was a rabbi. It's a video out there on YouTube. But yeah, so he says that the only way that the lobster grows is by being uncomfortable. So, you know, they have this outer shell and it constricts growth. And the only way that they can grow is by shedding that shell. Mm-hmm. Of course, now you're completely exposed. You know, there's no skeleton protecting you, but you start growing and then you grow a new shell. So the only way you can grow is by being uncomfortable. And I think that women, and that's something that, you know, I talk to my twin sister about this all the time.
There's two of you.
There's two of us, unfortunately.
It's scary.
We're just afraid of failure, you know, and we're afraid, oh, no, I'm going to stay here in my little bubble because that way, you know, it's going to be okay, but you can't grow. Mm. So we need to be like the lobster.
Just on that point, I just, I'm a huge fan of a photographer called Paul Nicklin, and he just released a masterclass, and he's an absolute genius, this guy. And he was talking about how 95% of the time he goes out and he does a shoot, and 95% of the time he fails at it. So if someone like him fails, well, then I think it's okay for us to fail too, and we just got to give it a go. And that's sort of what it's about.
Yeah. So we're not trying to exclude, you know, the male population at all. I just think that they find the way a little bit easier than us. It's more of a male. So scuba diving now is actually quite even still, it's more of a male industry. Yeah, dominated industry. Yeah, thank you. Sometimes I forget words, so.
That's all right. I do too, and I'm English.
Yeah, there you go.
So we're not excluding anyone, but we just need that little push. In underwater photography, it's even more male-dominated. And if you then get scuba diving, underwater photography, and technical diving, it's even, you know, more male-dominant. So just a little bit of a push.
Mm. Do you think that's because the male of the species is the more competitive? They're more open to say, look at this awesome fucking photo I've just done. And you can quite clearly look at it and think, yeah, it's decidedly average. And a woman has got a bit more intellect would say, I'm not going to put this into a competition because it's decidedly average.
Well,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. I just find that for whatever reason, you know, like I meet tons of people now that I've been in the retail business for a long time. And usually it's men that have hobbies, you know, and women sometimes don't have as many hobbies. So they depend a lot. Oh, you know, my partner is not really, they're doing something this weekend and I'm going to be bored. Well, then get your own hobby.
Yeah.
So we just need a little bit more of a push. Not everyone. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not everyone. I mean, this woman is a mad diver. She spends more time under the water than on the surface. But I just find that we need a little bit more of a push.
Mm-hmm. And how are you doing the push?
So unfortunately for both, we do have a side business, right? So we just can't dedicate this as much time as we would like to. But I think the way that we're doing it is by creating this platform. And of course, you create the platform, and if you don't do anything about it, then it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
But we're trying to do it through competitions.
So last year at Oztech, I'm not sure if you saw, but we held a competition for all the women out there that want to enter water photography. We had five categories, I think it was.
Yeah.
And they got exhibited there. Yeah. The winners got exhibited there.
Yeah.
But we also want to do workshops, kind of like get-togethers. We also do feature artists. So next month, actually tomorrow, right? Yeah, tomorrow is March. So next month, we have the new 3 featured artists coming out. So we want to create blog. We have some blogs out there. So just kind of trying to put people out there. And I know that it's very difficult because now social media, you know, everyone has social media and there's so much stuff out there.
Mm.
So as Talia says, trust the process. Mm. So we're going to do it slowly, but we want to
do it actively.
Yeah, actively. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So what's on the near horizon then for Liquid?
Liquidlin?
Yeah, what's the next thing that's coming up?
Well, like Vanessa said, we want to do a workshop.
Mm-hmm.
Can we say what?
Yeah.
So we're looking at, we've been trying to find someone perfect for it. We want to do a surf photography workshop.
Okay.
Which would be completely out of our comfort zone.
Totally, which is why we want to do it.
Yeah. Mm. Lobster,
exactly. So that's something we really need to, you know, do, because we've been talking about it for about 6 months now.
Yeah.
Mm. Every year we're going to hold a competition. So there'll be another competition towards the end of this year, starting mid-year. The entries
will be held as well at Bellagio Cafe.
Yep.
Thank you, Alex.
Yep. And then we want to do a shootout event at a local dive site where everyone gets together. They shoot at the same site. We see what comes of it and we sort of do a placement.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, just bringing community together, maybe doing a barbecue, something like that.
And networking, I think that is key.
Yeah.
You know, like if I can give someone a tip, it would be don't burn bridges and as much as you can. But yeah, just with meeting people is how things happen.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm.
Everyone crosses paths for some reason.
Yeah.
And in this industry as well, it's so fucking small. Mm. Everybody knows everybody.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, that's true.
Absolutely.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
Quite scary.
It is very scary. It can be a good or a bad thing.
Yeah.
You
okay for beer?
Are you okay for beer?
I'm all right. I've got a little bit left.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I still have.
You got your water?
I've got my
your quality
water.
H2O. Yeah.
Tap water.
Okay, so Australia Underwater Images, or images, what, say it again. Is it AIA?
So my company, yeah. My Aquatic Imaging Australia.
Yeah, AIA.
I know the most complicated, it's actually a lot shorter than the one before, because I...
What was it before? Was it Spanish or something?
No.
Her name.
No. It was Down Under Aquatic Imaging.
Okay.
So I kind of added one word, took out another one.
Yeah. Mm. Okay.
Yep.
And that's so, because I mean, when we first met was when I jumped on the course with Gareth Locke.
Yeah.
And you were, and you were working out of the dive shop there, and you had your little bits and pieces. And it wasn't long after that I saw you put up a post and they've officially allowed you to put a banner up out the front or something.
Yeah. Thank you, Duncan.
Yeah. What's the background on that one? Are you now kind of partnering in the displays?
This is a sore spot.
Yeah. Oh, good.
So, I actually used to manage Dives and the Bondi.
Yeah.
And then I stepped out for a few years, came back for the weekends and stuff like that. And when Pete Lightowler, which was the previous owner of Down Under Aquatic Imaging, gave me the opportunity to take over this business. Thank you, Pete. I said, sure. And since I'm a Bondi girl, Dives in the Bondi girl, I just asked Duncan, the owner, if, hey, can I have a display? I think this can work mutually, you know. There's going to be customers coming through here, and I'm also exposed to people there. This is the only exposure that interests me. and yeah, he said, sure. Like, he was the most accommodating person ever. And he's the one that actually told me, Vanessa, it's time to put the sign outside.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's all his fault.
Good man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cause I didn't have a clue that you were in there until I walked through that door.
Yeah. I know. It's been actually Talia. Is the one that helped me with the sign. So
and her lovely merchandise.
Exactly. Thank you very
my
much.
My full-time job.
She dresses me. So yeah, because I've been there 2.5 years, So, and the displays are growing slowly, taking over a little bit the shop.
Good, good. You do T-shirts?
I do, which is why I was admiring your handiwork on the weekend.
Do you like that?
I do. It's great.
Have you seen the back?
Hey?
Have you seen the back as well?
No, you talked about it though. Yeah. Want to turn around?
No.
Okay.
It's all my designs, but I'm looking for... We'll have to talk afterwards.
Yeah. We'll talk.
If it's fucking expensive, I don't want to know.
I'll sort you out. Don't worry.
Yeah.
All good.
Yeah. I need a little bit of merch.
Yeah. This is, you know, networking. It works.
It does.
You know, I get these in from Germany.
Why?
Oh, wow.
Because it's cheaper than here. Everywhere I've found here so far, I've been...
Exactly.
I really want to. And I've got some that I've got lined up that are within Australia for providing the T-shirts, but they're still fucking expensive. So people just don't want to buy them. So we'll chat and see what the prices are like.
Fair enough.
I'm sure they'll be good because, you know, we've got a Spanish lady here sat wearing a T-shirt that you've done.
And doesn't it look great?
It does. It's awesome.
My own design.
Oh, we're going to go down that route, are we?
Yeah. Hold on a moment. See, we've got to turn around. Showing is caring. Oh, that's cool.
Nice.
Very cool.
Yes.
Love it. Excellent.
Very, very cool.
I've called it the logo of legends.
Oh, okay.
It's what I made up for Oztec. So everyone's... or the names that are on there creating the goat logo are the names of the people that were on the show prior to me.
No way.
Yeah.
Damn, we were too late.
So you missed out by about 4 months.
We might have to create a 2023 version.
Oh, version 2.0.
Right?
Yeah. Cool. Let's just get back to the diving a little bit. Mm. You're obviously an instructor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Preferences? Paddy, SSI, RAID?
Well, TDR? I'm a paddy instructor, so that's what's, you know, allowing me to or gave me the opportunity to work. Mm. But I'm a GUE diver, and that's kind of the philosophy that I follow when I go diving. But teaching is paddy, and now of course I run my own underwater photography workshops.
Mm. Yeah, I want to get into that one in a minute.
Mm.
Yeah, what about you, Talia?
TDI/GUE. I'm not sort of set on one philosophy, but...
But you're paddy as well, right?
I guess.
Some point in the past.
My rescue course was through paddy. My tech courses have been TDI. Yeah. I did Fundy's GUE, which was a game changer for me. I can't rave enough about that course. So,
what's that one, sorry?
Fundy's, Fundamentals.
Okay.
Changed my diving from... I mean, I thought I was a decent diver before, but after Fundy's, it just took me up through the clouds.
Really? Which is a fantastic course if
it
you
is
are a
so
photographer.
Good. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, 100%.
Mm-hmm. Explain. Why?
Where do I start? I mean, so you do a course with Paddy or TDI or whatever, RAID. They'll pretty much pass you no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
They don't focus on fundamental things that I cannot live without when it comes to diving, like good buoyancy, trim, awareness, skills like shooting a bag, like shooting an SMB.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I didn't shoot an SMB on my open water or advanced course. I think the first time I shot an SMB was 3 years ago.
Okay.
And I've been diving for 7. GUE sort of focuses on all those essential things that make a good diver.
Mm.
So, and if you don't perfect it, you don't pass.
Mm.
I do find, I mean, Paddy has had a big change on some basics, like for example, SMBs are now mandatory on courses.
Because I did mine a while ago.
Mine was, you know, online didn't even exist. And I do find that with other courses, you know, like TDI, RAID or INTD or whatever, it's a lot more the instructor that you get. So you get super good quality training. And I do find that there's tons of divers out there from these organizations that are just absolutely masters of diving.
Mm.
It's just that GUE has a different philosophy and they have more control over the instructors because, you know, you get renewed every 3 years and standards are more stable. In saying that, In the 20 years that I've been diving, I've seen tons and tons of people from other organizations that, you know, take care about how they dive, buoyancy, trim, you know, awareness. So I wouldn't say so much that it's the organizations. It goes down to you know, the instructor that you get. So my recommendation for people is, if you don't want to do GUE, you know, you don't have to do GUE, but just make sure that the instructor that you get is an active instructor. You know, these people have to be doing some exploration and just being active divers, because if you get an instructor that only teaches, then you're not going to get the full spectrum of what you need to become a good diver. So you need to, same thing, you know, if I'm teaching underwater photography courses, if I don't shoot, then what am I teaching my students? So, yeah.
It's one of those things that, I mean, it's come up on the podcast quite a few times, and it, me personally, I think it really doesn't matter who you learn with, agency-wise. And like you say, it all points at the instructor. Because if that instructor is an awesome diver underwater, it could be an absolutely fucking arsehole on the surface. And you're not going to learn from an arsehole if you clash characters. So you need to find someone that's going to be enjoyable to be around, and someone that you're going to absorb the information that they're effectively passionately giving. You know, if someone's just
passion,
stealing off,
exactly, passion,
you've got to have that passion.
Passion.
If you've not got that passion, you're not gonna, you know you're not gonna pass it on.
I just wish that there was no, you know, conversations about, oh, I'm GUE, oh, I'm INTD, oh, I'm TDI, I'm better than you. No, we all here for the same reason. We all want to take care of the ocean, and we all want to have fun. But the lawnmowers need to get better training.
The lawnmowers?
Yeah, you know when you see people down there and they're just destroying everything? Those are the ones that need to get training. Doesn't matter the organization, just get good training.
Find some fucking buoyancy.
Exactly.
It's like those, I've seen them a couple of times in my years.
I keep on seeing them every single year.
And especially when people are doing, especially when people have got a camera in the hand. It's my pet hate. It's my absolute pet hate. I actually banned a guy from taking his camera on dives on the liverboard that I was running in Thailand. It was that bad.
I've done that in Egypt when I was working as well.
Yeah. Absolute danger. Which leads me nicely onto teaching and cameras. The courses that you're doing.
Yeah.
Let's talk about those. What are you doing?
Well, I teach underwater photography courses, and at the moment it's more catering towards basic, so people that have never touched a camera in their lives, or those that maybe have a camera but they've just basically, you know, pointing, pressing the button and shooting, moving kind of a little bit into manual or just, you know, adding lights or strobes or whatever. So just more of the basics. And, you know, there's other people out there that are doing advanced courses, like, for example, Matty Smith, you know. I'm not quite there yet. Imposter syndrome, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, I'm more in the basic area, teaching people. Not because I consider myself basic. It's just that I feel more comfortable, you know, just bringing these babies into the world. Yeah.
To be honest, I've been considering it. Because I think
I know a place that you can go to.
Me too. Ken Tongpilar, macro mode.
Hey, Ken is fantastic. Fantastic. No problem there. There's work for all of us.
Yes. No, I mean, joking aside, I mean, it's I think it's a huge, huge niche within the industry, that, well, the photography, the dive in photography sector. People just don't. They don't go and learn. They get a camera and they go and play.
Yeah, because you don't need to. You know, like, it's like, yeah, but scuba diving, right? At least in, for example, in New South Wales, when I used to live in WA, you don't need to. But here you need a license to go diving. So it kind of makes sense that you have to go somewhere to learn. But with a camera, when you go buy a housing, I never ask people, or I never tell someone, sorry, I'm not going to sell you a housing because you don't have a license, right? So it's not mandatory. So it's not regulated the same. It can't be regulated.
No, I think I've got a cross communication there. What I mean is, people will be divers and decide they're going to take a camera to get all the photography that they want, and they produce all those little shit videos that go on reels and their little shit cameras.
Oh no!
You know, all that kind of stuff, and it takes so long to learn how to actually get a really nice shot. And if you try and do that on your own.
Yeah.
It takes even longer.
On that point, when I was just starting out, I took about 5 different courses. So, you know, Maddie Smith, I did three courses through him, actually. Gaetano, I did one through Nicholas Remy, did a course with him to learn some more experimental techniques. And you get something different from every single person, and that's sort of what helps you grow. So, yeah, you can go out and you can just sort of fool around and you know, maybe figure it out, but it, you know, it helps.
Yeah.
To learn from the pros. So
I think what you've done there is excellent, because you can cherry pick.
I always told
my instructors that were working with me over the years, you know, go and follow that person, go and follow that person, listen to that person, and just cherry pick the bits that you like, and you can formulate your own way of doing things, your own style.
Yep.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. So I noticed on your website that you're doing your own in-house photography courses,
mm-hmm.
away from Paddy and all those kind of people.
Well, I still have Paddy courses.
Yeah,
just they're a bit more expensive because they have a certification.
Mm.
So some people are not interested in having a certification.
Yeah. Well, you don't need one, do you?
No, absolutely you don't.
Yeah.
But there's some people that like collecting cards, or they like having a card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We all know those people. Yeah.
Yeah.
So was it 2 courses that you've got?
Yeah, so I run freediving tasters, and then I've got a scuba diving workshop, yeah.
Mm.
The freediving at the moment is just 1 day, and the scuba diving can be 1 or 2 days.
It'd be quite a cram in 1 day, eh?
Well, it's very, very... Freediving photography, now that I've, you know, I can say that I'm quite proficient at it, it's very, very, very different to scuba diving, and you've got the advantage of being able to talk on the surface.
Yeah.
So you can run them very differently. So it's just complete different type of photography.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And is it the freediving when you do all of the kind of modeling shots that you've got on display on your photos?
Yeah. So yes, but I also have... So... Another of my services is I provide portrait shoots, and I specialize on underwater pole dancing.
Yeah.
And that's when I get my models in the pool, and I get people. I sometimes have these ideas that I want to do, and then, of course, I go to my models. I've got 3 that I regularly use, and I cherish them because it's very difficult to train them. And then, of course, I also get them in the ocean. But I try not to do any more randoms because it's too complicated. And then people want photos, and I just work with the people that I work. And if someone wants to get a photo from me, then they just need to pay me for it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Give me your pounds.
Yeah, exactly.
Your dollars.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
So super, super excited, and then. I've got some stuff planned overseas for next year.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't really say just yet because I haven't finished, you know, the details. So I don't want to say, oh, we're going here, and it doesn't end up happening.
I'll get you there. You know, I've got a travel company.
Yeah. Oh, no, I didn't know that. Damn.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Nomadic scuba that leads expeditions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Good, good. Good to know. Very good to know.
Ladies and gents, I hope you're enjoying the show. And as a very quick reminder, the Underwater Club will be launching later this week, and you still have time to enter the pre-launch giveaway. Now, it's super simple, and you have the chance to win some awesome prizes. So, I'll put a link in the show notes for you, and good luck with the competition. Let me know if you win a prize.
And I'm also going to Tradi in June, that there's also some spots available for that one. So Stradbroke Island.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going there in April.
Mm,
yeah.
Nice.
Are you on that one?
No.
Ah, unlucky. No.
Well, in June I'll be in South Australia for the giant cuttlefish migration.
Oh, you're going down there?
Yeah.
Yeah. That comes up on this podcast so often.
Mm. It what?
It comes up on this podcast so often.
Well, it just got named a World Heritage Site as well. And I've been wanting to do it for years, but I've always been somewhere else in the world. So I've made a point this year to do it. So.
Yeah. We were gonna head down this year and do it as well, but I've got a Galapagos expedition in July.
Can't complain about that.
Yeah. So I've got to kind of offset it and maybe do the cuttlefish next year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the problem. It's right here, so... It's easy to put off.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But it's everyone says, oh yeah, it's easy because you're in Australia, but hold on a moment, getting from here down to South Australia isn't a short trip.
Oh, it's, you know what, I actually find it surprisingly not so painful.
Do you drive?
No. Are you, you nuts? I fly. Of course I fly.
All right. How long's the flight?
It's like an hour and a half, two hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, from the UK, that's the middle of Europe.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. You know, fair enough. But no, I love South Australia. It's got a special place in my heart now. So yeah. Big fan of the Leafies there and Southern Blue Devils and yeah.
That's why I'm so desperate to get down there and dive, and I just don't find the time, or I can't warrant the expense right now.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I do need to get down there. It's the Leafies are my target.
Yeah.
And the Great Whites.
Yeah.
You know, I've spoken to Andrew about it several times now, and I'd love to get on his boat and just jump in the cage and get on the deck 20 metres down.
Yeah. Mm. Well, let me know if you go, because that's also, yeah.
Yeah.
Bucket list.
Want to do the whites? I went once and there were no sharks.
So, oh, really?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, there's going to be more. There's going to be more. I had Leonardo Guida on the show 5-6 months ago, and he was explaining to me that the great whites in South Africa are getting more or less frequent, and they've noticed a migration because of the water temperatures, and they're moving more from South Africa over to South Australia.
Oh, okay.
So they're seeing a larger population of whites down south.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. Which is going to be interesting because there's also nurse sharks that are migrating south. And I don't think there's anywhere in the world where great whites and nurse sharks have kind of inhabited the same location.
Mm. That's interesting.
So it'll be interesting to see what goes off.
Mm.
Shark fights everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Get those on camera.
The new Sharknado, yeah.
Yeah. Happy days. Mm. And so with the expeditions, are you going to do that on a regular frequency?
Yeah. Yeah, there's going to be at least one or two per year. So, yeah.
Okay.
Watch out.
Maybe we should talk.
Maybe.
Yeah. Now, there's an element of my travel company that I'm branching out on, and I've got, much like ourselves, dive pros around the world that want to do the same thing. They want to go and dive in these amazing locations and not spend a shit ton of money, and are happy to organise it.
Mm.
So we're using Nomadic Scuba as the springboard.
Yeah.
So people are going out and going as agents of Nomadic Scuba and leading expeditions.
Mm.
So Don's considering it for Papua New Guinea.
Oh, okay.
I've got Tim in Thailand that's going to be doing various locations, Tom in England that wants to do South Africa, and other people over in Mexico. Well,
that South Africa is in the horizon, looks like it.
Have you done it?
No, it's... Don't want to say too much, because what if it doesn't happen? It's a trip that I'm considering for next year.
What, the Sardine Run? Or?
I don't want to say it.
Why?
Because I don't know if it's going to happen. So
no,
I just
it will happen. If you say it, it'll happen.
Okay.
If you avoid it, it won't happen.
Well, it's just that I'm toying between a few destinations, so it's hard.
What's the destinations then?
Oh, my God. He said he was
You're pushy. Look at you.
Yeah. I'm interested. I want to know where people want to go.
Well, it's toying between three things, which is Canada, Mexico, and South Africa. So
okay.
Mm.
So what's the pull to Canada? What's the attraction there?
Different. Well, the cold water being one, but some of the not so well known wrecks.
Okay.
Well, they are well known, but maybe not so many people dive them if they are out of North America. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
And then a pull to Mexico, the cenotes?
No. So, well, yes and no. So, yes. So, partly the cenotes. Partly the cenotes. Yeah. And it's kind of the country where it's the country that I met my partner. So,
okay.
We absolutely love it there. And yeah, we always have kind of that. We gravitate thinking about, you know, Mexico. And we've been back. We did some cave training.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely incredible. You know, I just said, no, I'm not a cave diver, but my partner Rick wanted to do it. Yeah, ticking the box, you know. When the instructor said that, I told him the same thing. You know, I'm just ticking the box. And then absolutely fell in love.
Really?
With the caves in Mexico. It's just a different world. It's you're there and you know that you don't have an exit straight to the surface, and you depend on the team, and just how light bounces off the structures, the water, the color of the water. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I enjoyed my time down there.
Mm-hmm.
But I've mentioned it a few times now. I got a little bit bored in between the entry and exit points.
Okay.
You know,
not if you don't. If you have a camera, you wouldn't.
No. I have my camera with me.
Ooh, okay.
So I was taking shots, but. No, I was more excited with just seeing the beautiful sun rays coming through the water.
You should see some of the photos that Talia came back with from Mexico.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible.
I mean, I'm sort of keen to see what she's talking about when you go deep into a cave, though, to be honest. I mean, yeah. I did a lot of the caverns with the sunbeams coming through, and it's very beautiful. But I did one there called Dreamgate Cavern, and you go pretty deep into it, and it's very decorated, and that's sort of an entry into what Vanessa was talking about going into these super decorated caves where you're going, 300 meters in without an exit point, and I don't...
Well, there is an exit point, but it's not
that way.
But I definitely see the appeal of what she's talking about when it comes to that.
Jeffrey Glenn, he's a techie diver. When he was out and doing the snowties, doing some sort of photo shoot, and he was modeling for people. But he was explaining to me how they set up all the strobe lighting and the back lighting and all that kind of stuff. And I think that if we were to go back to the snowties and say, hey, Matt, we're going to do this, I'd be really interested.
Well,
that's
the thing, that's what I did. I called them my light bitches. but. Thank you, Joaquin. Thank you, Rick. It gives such a different perspective.
Rick does a lot of bitch work, doesn't he?
Yeah. Poor Rick. Love you.
And then the pull to South Africa is?
Oh, my God. Just the sardine run.
Okay.
And some safari stuff.
Yeah. I can hook you up on all of those. There's a fantastic couple that work out of Port St. John's, and they are the only people that are there full time, 24/7, 356 days a year.
Okay.
And she's in the Women's Divers Hall of Fame.
Oh, wow.
Debbie Smith. And they run a fantastic outfit. And have you done the sardine run already?
No.
Okay. You might get 10 dives in a week. The rest of the time, it's snorkeling, jumping in.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know that this is not for the faint of hearted. And you need to be fit because you're jumping on, off the boat. So,
yeah. You'll freeze your tits off and think, what the fuck am I doing on this little rib in the middle of the sea, chasing up and down, waiting for a pilot over the top to tell me where to go. And just as you think, fuck it, I want to go home and have a cup of tea, it goes off.
Yeah,
I know. When it goes off, it is amazing.
I know.
Amazing.
I know. That's the reason. Adventure.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's certainly one to get on. You've got to do it. of the three that we've just commented on, you've got to do that.
Yeah. It's on the work, so we'll see. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll give you all Debbie's details, put you in touch. You can speak to her. Yeah.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. What's next? What's next?
You did send us quite a few questions.
We've got to do those, haven't we?
Yeah.
Hold on. Let me get my glasses on. I can't see anything. I'm getting old. I've got my 50th next year.
Ooh.
February next year, I'm 50 years old. I can't believe it.
Well, looking good.
It's all over then.
Apparently so, yeah.
This woman is in her 30s and,
sorry.
Yeah.
Don't be a hater. Don't be a hater.
Okay, so the 10 questions that most people get, all right? We'll do them one at a time, just go left, right.
Yeah.
Or jump in if you get excited. Number one, how do you describe your job, stroke pastime, as a diver to people who are not familiar with the activity?
Your left.
He looked at you. It's super easy now. I mean, almost everyone knows about diving. The only thing is, and it sounds kind of kind of weird to say, because I now have moved on to the professional side. And the only reason why I'm professional is because I make money out of it. It doesn't mean, that I'm better than anyone else.
Yeah.
It's just when there's the money exchange, the question more now, it's not so much what is it that you, it's more how do you get there? Like, how can you make money out of underwater photography and diving. And when, you know, when I say, or when people ask me what I do, I just say I'm an underwater photographer. But there's so much behind it, because I do retail, I do courses, trips, photo shoots. So you just need to become the master of many crafts.
Yeah.
And just be strong. And at the moment, you know, everyone takes photos, everyone dives. So it's a very open and well-known industry. So it's very, very easy to explain. I dive, I get under the water, and I take photos. It's hard for people to understand how you make money out of it. That's the hardest.
Do you not feel that it's getting harder and harder to make money out of it because of social media? And then you've got all the software that's helping, you know, your post edit or your post shot edit.
But it's great though. Like, if you think about it, you know, when I was with my previous boyfriend, that we had a Sony Cyber, can't remember what it was, and it was a 3.2 megapixel camera, and my sister and I bought him a 256 megabyte card, and we were like, oh my God, this thing is incredible. It cost us like, I don't know, 150 euros, you know, crazy. Anyways, and completely lost what I was saying. What were we talking about?
Social media.
Social media. So before, it was a lot harder to take photos just because there was not that much available. And now even the phone, you know, you get the phone in even a shitty casing and it takes incredible photos. But remember, it's not the racket, it's the monkey. I go back to it. It's very saturated. Yeah. It's so saturated, and everybody, you know, as soon as somebody says, hey, you know, can I use one of my, yes, you know, everybody wants to showcase their photos, so photos are given for free everywhere, and then, of course, you lose the value, because when things are free, you know, people don't care about it. Mm. So it's just very hard at the moment to make money out of photography. So you do need to become very resilient and outsource other areas. Mm. And I'm slowly trying to get more into commercial photography or shooting. So I've been super, super, super lucky to be working with some productions. And one of them was the latest movie, Blue Bag. Mm-hmm. Go and watch it in the movies, guys. But yeah, I think that you need to become very much doing everything and anything. So it's not just taking photos. You can make money out of it, and I know people that make money out of it, but it's very, very, very rare.
Yeah. Are you guys on Pexels? Have you got a Pexels account?
No.
What do you do with all the shit photos that you don't put on your social media?
I don't show them.
Yeah, me neither.
I put mine on Pexels. There's like 1.7 million views.
Where does that get you?
Well, they get to, people can download them for free, and you just put a link in there. If you want something better than this, heading over there.
I don't even think I'd give my shit photos away for free, to be honest.
Me neither.
Unless there's money involved, sorry.
The free word doesn't work.
That doesn't exist, no. The amount of money you pour into what we do, I'm not giving anything away for free, that's for sure.
Unless there is something in the horizon. You know, when people say, hey,
true.
Because I get tons of questions, say, hey, can I have one of your photos? Or give me this for free. And like, because I'm going to give you, for me, you know, this word that I dread, which is exposure. Mm-hmm. And I have now resorted, after talking to some of my fellow photographers, saying, if you think you're going to give me exposure, let's do this. I'm going to charge you now. But if you give me exposure and it translates into, you know, cash, because I don't pay my bills, you know, just from the air.
from the money tree.
So if there's proven exposure and I'm going to get money through it, then I'll return, you know, your investment in me. But there's so much of give me stuff for free. And everybody's, you know, everybody wants to showcase their photos, which there's nothing wrong with it. Mm. But at the moment, I've reached a point where I can't really do that for free.
Yeah. Jason Fondis in Panita, we were talking about this last time I was over there. And he gets so many people from Instagram and TikTok. You know, I've got 1.7, 2.7, 10 million people following. Mm. I'll come and dive with you as long as it's for free and I'll give you all this exposure. He fucking hates it.
That word.
First thing he says, oh, that's really good. That sounds great. That's fantastic. What's your ROI? And they're like, what? Well, what's your return on investment? What do you mean? Well, you want me to give you this shit for free. How many people of those 10 million people are following you come to me? What's your conversion rate? And he's never had a right answer out of it.
Exactly. Yeah. Look, a lot is educating, you know, because people don't actually realize. And I know, you know, that if somebody says, hey, give me one of your photos, it's going to end up in National Geographic. Who wouldn't want to have that? And it's so hard to actually say no. I mean, National Geographic is different. I don't know if I would say no to that, but just a small magazine that wants my photos for free, then I'm also a small business and this is how I survive. And if people want my business to be there for their needs, you know, because I have my retail space and it's good. Somebody needs a clam, they come and pick one up, or a housing or whatever. So if we could all support these small businesses that actually make something we're giving a service, then they need to invest in us if they want us to survive. So
hell yeah.
Yeah. Controversial topic, right, Talia?
I love it. I fucking love it.
Yeah.
And it needs talking about. And it's the bigger system as well. It's not just photography and small businesses like yourself. It's the operations as well.
Yeah.
Dive Center Bondi. It's a big operation.
But
however,
it's still a small business.
A small business. And there's that constant fight to try and find the balance on what a customer's going to pay, because some dickwart down the road has reduced the prices because they want to cut corners and get shit ton of people through the door.
And customer service, man, I have to say that I'm willing to pay more for customer service. And I think, Talia, that's something that you've always said the same, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, 100%. I'm in there as well. Yeah, I'd much rather pay an extra 25%. Ryan up in Newcastle, he's the same. He's adamant. He wouldn't.
Ryan and us have something going on, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah.
What's that then?
Well,
I don't know if we can talk about it.
Well,
I think we can.
I'll message the douche later. Yeah.
Man, he got a bad rap with that laugh.
I feel for him because I'm a macho. So as a little girl, being a macho is not great. So we're working with him to do some CCR courses for the female underwater, the female diving community. So he's been very, very kind and helpful. And
he's pitching that through Liquid Lens.
Okay, so what you mean is that you've mentioned it to Joe and she's told him he's doing it.
No, actually, he did say that Joe had mentioned, or maybe I actually spoke through text with Joe. So I think that Joe has influenced him, but he was actually the one that reached out.
Yeah.
So, and saying empowering women, but he did mention Joe. Yeah. So, yeah.
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 Great.
Behind every man, there's a woman. You know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. No, they're great people.
Yeah.
What about yourself? Do you remember the question?
No.
How do you describe your job / pastime as a diver to people who are not familiar with the activity?
To be honest, it's really hard because I don't remember what my life was like before diving.
Wow.
Yeah, really? Seriously, yeah. I think I was uninspired and very bored, and then I just found it, and it's sort of like a therapy and a community. Like, our community in Sydney is amazing. Mm. And just a passion, you know, especially with photography, it gives you a purpose. Mm. So, yeah, I think all of those things are really important. And, you know, whether it be diving or sailing or whatever it is, you need whatever that is. Mm. So for me,
it's a passion.
A passion, yeah.
Now I don't ask the question anymore, what do you do? I just say, what is your passion?
Because that's the thing. When people ask me what I do for a living, I almost don't want to tell them what my job is because that's not what I am, who I am. I'm a diver. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, yeah.
I kind of stumble over it still, you know, and I started the podcast. I'm like, well, what am I? Am I a travel agent? Mm. Am I an expedition leader?
Yeah.
Am I a podcast host? Mm. So the amount of times I got caught off guard so many times.
Describe,
so I'm like, well, I'm me. You know, yeah. And I talk about diving a lot. Mm. You know.
So you're a diver first.
Oh, fuck yeah. Yeah. My happy place is in the water.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I think for all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Number two. We're going to start with you here.
Oh, Ali, no.
So Vanessa can forget this one.
Okay.
Can you share a memorable diving experience that stands out to you as the best you've had?
Mm. This is a hard one for me to get my head around because there's a few.
Yeah.
I think three. Can I say three? Or is there one?
Well, you're not the first person to say I want to say three instead of one.
Really?
So go for it.
Okay. So I think one of the best moments I've ever had was we were in Swansea, actually. And we went there because we'd heard there's a dolphin hanging around and we were like, let's just go check it out. You know, best case we find it, worst case we get a good dive in. We get there, the current is raging. I mean, you guys, I don't know if you've dived Swansea, but when the current goes, it rages. Mm. So we get there, it's raging. I'm holding on for dear life onto this piece of debris. I've got my head down because I don't want the water brushing, you know, sort of like an impact zone. So my head's completely down. The next thing I hear my buddy screaming through her rig and I look up and this dolphin's face is right next to me looking at like straight in my dome. And I was like, I cannot believe this is happening.
Yeah. How close?
Hey?
How close?
Maybe 30 centimeters.
Fuck.
Yeah. And this beautiful thing just hung around for about 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, dodging and it was beautiful, great. So mission success with that. Second one was seeing a seahorse give birth at Clifton Gardens.
Oh, wow.
What? Oh, yeah. Not just once, though, like two or three times.
Wow.
Yeah.
Seals giving birth in Clifton Gardens?
No, seahorses.
Oh, seahorses?
Oh, seals. I thought you said seals for a moment.
I wish, sorry.
Okay, seahorses.
Seahorses. Okay. I wish seals. That would have been really good. And then my third is probably in the Maldives. We went down to a cleaning station for mantas. There were about 12 of them. Two were pregnant. Mm-hmm. And then a mating train started, which was pretty cool. And, yeah, just being around that many giants was mind-blowing. So, yeah, those are the three that sort of stand out for me.
Good on you.
Yeah.
What about you, Vanessa?
Funnily enough, when I read the question, I thought, it's three. So,
oh, there you go. Three it is.
I mean, I have tons of others, but because I've seen all type of wildlife, but two in Australia, actually, and one in Spain. And the one in Spain is just a beautiful wreck down in Almeria. And usually it has terrible conditions. And we just happened to go down, incredible conditions. There were mola swimming around and this massive school of maybe like 300 or 400 eagle rays just on each side, stern and bow of the boat. And it was during my instructor course, actually. And came up, you know, raving, oh my God, you guys need to get in the water. Just go, go, go. They go down. No molas, no ray, terrible visibility, just in a span of 10, 15 minutes. So that one was incredible. And then my first encounter in Western Australia, just by luck with a grey white.
Yeah.
We hugged the reef.
I wonder why.
And funnily enough, in WA, you can actually catch stuff with in scuba. So the guy that we were diving with found a big lobster and grabbed it with a hand, didn't have a bag or anything, and just clipped it in his BC. So he had this massive lobster alive, clipped in his BC, meanwhile this great white was coming. And that was with my Rob, the teacher, and my partner, Rick. And then the other one here in Sydney, that we're exploring a reef that is quite deep. It's between 68 and 90 meters. And we ended up finding a little fishing boat that had sunk. It went quite viral, the whole thing. It ended up in a helicopter rescue because we got lost. It was just like a massive thing. But
you got lost.
Well, we got lost. The skipper was looking somewhere else. And anyways, at first, hopefully never again helicopter rescue. But It's funny because the guy came on the winch down, you know, and there was four of us, and we had, you know, like rebreathers, scooters, camera gear, all the tech. Like, do you guys want to come on the helicopter? I'm ready to, you know, pull you up. And we looked around at $100,000 worth of gear. Mm-hmm. And no, we're staying here. Thank you very much.
Send the boat.
Yeah, but then we ended up finding the owner of the fishing boat, and he almost died. You know, it was the whole story. It was just absolutely incredible. And then, of course, the Westpac helicopter. We ended up doing a bit of a fundraiser for them because it's a free service in New South Wales.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
We're going to have to unpack this one a little bit. Because that sounds fucking amazing.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say amazing because I honestly thought I prepared to spend the night at sea. I did not think they were going to find us.
Yeah, back it up a bit though.
As in, what do you mean?
What were you going diving on?
Like the reef, you mean?
Yeah.
We were exploring the peak. It's just 4 nautical miles out of Sydney.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a beautiful, deep reef.
Okay.
And difficult to get to because, you know, conditions can be very challenging. But it's just these massive canyons that you would think maybe are bare, but they're just covered in white soft coral, sponges. And we've been there with incredible visibility. And it's just absolutely beautiful. And, you know, the thrill of going deeper. Mm. I think the maximum I've done there is 79.
Okay.
But some of the boys managed to get down, I think, to 90, which is kind of the bottom that we found. But it's tough to get there. You need to have great conditions.
Yeah.
And we've learned a lot from our mistakes doing that reef. But it's just stunning, absolutely stunning. And for photography, landscape is just, which is what I like, you know, big, wide landscapes.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
So that dive itself, how did it go tits up? Was it on the way back up? And
no, so, you know, now that I think about it, there's so many things that it was just a bit choppy, but beautiful day. And we were keen to get there because it's hard to get there. And I was messing around with my camera when we were on the boat, but apparently when they threw the line with a big, you know, these big, massive orange buoys, the buoy went under. Okay. So that, you know, shows that the current is ripping. I didn't even notice, you know, I was busy with my camera. And then when we jumped in the water, super ripping current, but it was like 40, 50 meter visibility. It was just absolutely insane. So the other two guys had dropped in earlier than us. My partner and I were there. And, you know, we saw the reef from, I think from 12 that we were doing a gas switch. We could see down to 60.
Wow.
And we could see, you know, through the ripping current, like, and we didn't have scooters. Big mistake. and we could see the reef disappearing. And we said, okay, we have to gun it down. And, you know, went down there. And then we just went with the current. But obviously, now, in hindsight, with a ripping current like that and doing such a deep dive, thinking of all the deco that we're going to be doing, we should have actually aborted or at least launched the SMB earlier. So tons of mistakes that we learned so much. but then we just happened to find that fishing vessel and current ripping. We couldn't really stay. I just managed to take a few snaps, got a very, very cool shot. didn't see them again, you know, and it happened that we found the other buddy team there, then did our ascent and they were a little bit longer than us and then did our, you know, deco, got to the surface and when Rick and I surfaced and we look around, we could not see land and we thought, this is shit. And then we happened to see the other couple, the other buddy team doing deco next to us. Like, what were the chances of seeing them again? And one of them carries a flag. So my partner went down, grabbed the flag. And then we were looking at the shipping container. And he said, okay, so plan B is the shipping container. And I thought, what are we going to do? Knock on the hull? Like, excuse me, can we jump on this thing? Anyway, so these other guys were wondering, meanwhile they were doing deco, why the boat was not there. They come up, we're trying to explain what's happening, and then this massive whale, you know, just shows up from under the water, and they didn't even see it. anyway, one had a radio, we ended up calling the helicopter. The helicopter didn't know that they were actually talking to us, and we could see it. And the helicopter was north, far, far, far away, And we were south, far, far, far away.
Yeah.
But we managed to...
Holy shit.
Yeah.
When was this?
2017.
Wow.
Yeah. I wouldn't recommend. Like, I thought... I thought, yeah, we... Here we go, Tasmania.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Carry a PLB every time you go deep now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And funnily enough, carry your SMBs, people. But yeah. The helicopter told us with four big SMBs, you know, the 1.8, 1.4, 100 meters from where we were, they couldn't see us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So pink is better, by the way. Buy pink SMBs, guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a fabulous story.
Oh, yeah. I mean, now I tell it and... You know, the story is fantastic, but I honestly thought they were not going to find us. Like, we were far, far, far away.
Yeah.
And the only reason they found us is because we were talking to the helicopter with the radio.
Do you know how far you were by the time you got back onto the...
Yeah, so an extra 5 nautical miles south and 1 extra nautical mile east. Yeah, so that's very, very long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. I bet the captain on the boat was shitting himself.
Yeah, I don't think he had a very fun day. And, you know, having to make the call of calling the police because it was the, you know, we ended up with the helicopter on top of us, the police boat. And I thought, oh, God, I don't want to be here right now.
Yeah.
But
to be fair, good shout out to the cops, though, because they've got some outstanding vessels, haven't they?
Yeah. Yeah. But I have to say, you know, the Westpac helicopter free service.
Yeah.
And well, obviously cops as well. They were all wonderful, honestly. Like, hands down, amazing team. Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone's going to beat that story this season on a podcast.
I don't know. You never know. You never know.
Fucking hell. What's the thing that you remember most? Oh, been evacuated by helicopter, 5 nautical miles.
Well, didn't end up evacuated because we wanted to stay with the gear, but
I didn't take a helicopter ride.
Rotating, yeah.
Carrying my camera.
Yeah, exactly. Too expensive.
Good on you. Okay, Talia, back to you.
No, we've got to start with her now.
Why?
No, I've talked enough.
She's had a look at the question. If someone wanted to pursue a career similar to yours in diving, conservation or science, what advice would you give them?
Trust the process. Mm. I keep coming back to it, but it's true. I mean, you get into diving or conservation or any of this, you're going to get hit back more times than you can possibly imagine. It's hard work. It's, you know... stressful, and you don't get much out of it aside from, you know, your love for the ocean and all that. So, yeah, just trust the process and push through it. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
That's it. Mm. Short but sweet answer.
Mm. Yeah, mine is very short as well. One of them is, you know, don't burn a bridge.
Yeah.
And you need to be, immersed in this.
Yeah. Oh, you've got to be. Mm. If you kind of slide away from it a little bit, then it disappears very quickly.
And be, you know, like she says, trust the process, but persistent and knowing that there's going to be times that you're going to fail. And
most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But failure is good.
The lobster.
It hurts.
There you go.
Like.
Oh, it hurts like fuck.
Yeah.
But it gives you a learning curve for the next time.
Mm. That's right.
Yeah.
Mm.
I love it. Okay. Let's move on. If you could change anything about the diving industry, or scuba diving in general, what would it be? Vanessa, we're going to start with you.
Yeah, well, I wish that it was a better paid job. And that way, you know, there would be, you know, because there's incredible individuals out there with incredible knowledge, incredible skills that can't make a living out of this because, you know, you get the $199 courses to learn to dive, and we need to think in Australia wages are quite expensive, and so anyways, the whole wide world is just we're doing a disservice to the diving industry by wanting everything cheap. So yeah, that would be one of them, that if we could potentially give back the value to diving, and because yes, it's a hobby and you might think we live in the dream, but it's still a job. So that would be one of them. And the second one for me, it's obviously maybe very cliche, but if we can take care of our waterways, which we don't really do. And I know that a lot of it is down to the government, but it's just, we just take it for granted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
Talia?
I mean, sort of similar answer, but I mean, I'd say if I'm tackling it from another point of view, it's, yeah, I mean... pay our dive instructors more, because essentially they're taking care of the lives of people when they take them under. So, and then, you know, pouring more into the educational side of it so that people who are getting into diving take care of our waterways better. Hmm. I mean, the amount of people we see underwater kicking coral and dragging their feet, and I mean, aside from the fact that, you know, it ruins, I mean, you go to Clifton Gardens and you get these people, you know, like you said, lawn mowing through. And first of all, as a photographer, it ruins the shot. But second of all, I've seen people kicking seahorses and kicking pylons that have life on it. And so, yeah, it just comes down to the education of it and you know, making sure that the instructors and that are taken care of.
Yeah.
And if we pay the instructors exactly. more, they will be able to teach better.
Because they'll care.
Exactly,
yeah.
Because they're not having to rush through courses to get the money in. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can get take your time divers. And make better divers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I'm very, very passionate about, is the shit salaries.
Mm. Yeah.
And everyone says, oh, it's all right, you're in the dive industry, you're living the dream.
Yeah.
No, you're fucking not. Yeah. You're eating cold noodles in the morning and not eating again for 6 hours because your salary is bollocks, you know.
It's true.
Now I'm just thinking back to Thailand.
Yeah.
But it is true, you know, and it's something that's been driven by the customer wanting everything as cheap as possible.
Mm.
Well, actually put some value on it. Put some value on the time, the professionalism and the experience that you're being given, you know. And realize how much it's worth.
Yeah.
It's a damn sight more than what they're paying.
Mm.
And then as for those operators out there that are cutting corners and making it as cheap as chips, assholes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's,
it's everywhere,
that,
right?
That's my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
It's true.
Mm. What are your thoughts on ways to minimize human impact on the oceans? That's a good one.
Controversial.
Mm.
Well, for me, one of them that is very clear, and I know that it's super controversial, but it's just the amount of fish that gets eaten.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, the super trawlers. And I know that we say that we're stripping the land, but what we're doing to the ocean that we can't even see. Mm. So it's kind of, again, another cliche, but if we stopped eating fish the way we eat fish and... how, you know, we don't really, and fish is so cheap.
Hmm.
Just, you know, get a roll of sushi and you pay $5 and you get some fish in there. It's just, we're just absolutely destroying it.
Yeah.
So I would say that that would be one of them.
Mm.
Mm.
That's a big one for me too. Well, I mean, I do eat fish, but I try to minimize it. I mean, Vanessa's a vegetarian, so. Mm.
You don't eat fish at all?
No.
Okay. I do at times.
Mm. Yeah, no, look, and the other day I was actually talking, I just came from a shoot in Port Douglas with Frank Gazzola, extraordinaire, and we're talking about it, like, you know, when you're doing expeditions and you're on a sailing boat in the middle of the ocean, if you need to carry cans of beans and vegetarian stuff on the boat, it takes up a lot of space. So how much easier to just, you know, fish for the day, one fish and off you go. So I know that we live a life of privilege as vegetarians here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so easy to be a vegetarian in other situations. But it's just control.
Yeah. I've got a few veggie mates that are, you know, veggie 24/7, but they have to, you know, change a little bit when they go remote Indonesia, those kind of locations.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Okay, what are your thoughts on ways to minimize human impact on oceans? We just had that one. Has your passion for diving or your industry changed over time? And if so, how?
I haven't been doing it long enough, so I really can't give any input on that. Vanessa's been doing it a lot longer, so she probably has a lot more input.
Well, for me, the change, I started as a dive instructor and teaching. It was good in Egypt because I was just guiding, so that was a nice break. But I think for me, you know, getting into photography, and then 3 years ago, just at the beginning of COVID, freediving. And
really?
Freediving photography is just, and well, I also do my portrait stuff, right? But that kind of like different type of photography just absolutely, it just gives me life as well. It's very, very different, you know?
Yeah.
But I love it. And freediving photography is very, very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there a particular conservation effort that you are particularly passionate about? If so, which one and why?
So there is one that I'm pretty into. It's called Project Hugh, and it's run by Madison Stewart, who most probably know as Shark Girl Madison.
You've got the hoodie.
I do. I've got a lot of other gear from her as well. It's essentially she's working out of Lombok, Indonesia, which is considered to be one of the main shark fishing areas in the world. You know, worldwide, there's something like, 11,000 sharks fished out every hour.
Yeah.
And so what she's done is she's gone in there and she's basically, her idea is to repurpose these shark fishing boats. So instead of them going out and fishing sharks out of the water, which is their livelihood, and let's be honest, sharks are, you know, we're running out of them.
Yeah.
They use these shark boats and repurpose them for tourism. Mm. So she'll hire them out. She'll get people to charter them and take them out to go, snorkeling, diving, surfing, visiting local villages. Also, really importantly, visiting the shark markets.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually go and see what would have happened if they didn't charter out the boat. You know, the boat would be full of sharks, which would end up at the market there. So I think that's pretty cool. It's a different way of looking at things. And yeah, it's a good cause. It's only been running 2 years now, but I think it's on the right path and can maybe make a difference. So.
She puts out some good footage, doesn't she?
Yeah, she's great. Yeah. She's great.
Do you know her?
No, not personally, but she's an Aussie, so representing.
Yeah, get in touch with her, get her on the show.
Oh, well, I'll try my best.
You can always ask.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, networking.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. How about you, V?
I think that everything that is ocean conservation, I'm up for it. Here in Australia, we're trying to, there's a small group, Saving Norman, and that some people are behind it, and just trying to get rid of the nets in, and all of the, because it's funny how we talk about shark nets and, New South Wales does this, but we've got the hooks in Queensland all the time, but nobody really talks about it because it's just there and it's there, it's been there forever and people kind of just forget about it. So it's a little bit how we treat the ocean and what we can do better. And I'm very passionate about sharks and I know another controversial topic, but we just need to keep those guys.
Yeah, for sure. And it's the nets and the hooks.
The drum lines. And you see them when you're on a boat out, a dive boat, you see them all along the coast. It's just, it's bad.
Yeah.
And we had that dolphin caught in the nets a few weeks back.
Mm-hmm.
It's devastating. And especially with the whales running through.
Yeah.
Well, there was another whale dead. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that dude down your way at Bondi does the
drone
shark.
Yeah, yeah. He's great.
He's fantastic. Mm. Yeah. He is a shining example of how effective drones are.
Yeah.
I can't see how the government can argue against it.
Yeah.
And they just continue to ignore it.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, well, hopefully we'll get there one day.
Yeah.
Okay. Of the many safety procedures we have in the industry, if you had to choose one as the most important, what would it be?
For me, super easy. Proper training.
Yep.
Period. That's it. You dive with the train. You can only dive up to the training that you have, and it has to be good training, which goes back to let's pay people properly.
Yeah.
But proper training. Yeah. It's key.
It's a never-ending circle, isn't it?
Yeah. What about you?
My answer was going to be buoyancy because, it sort of starts at that. You're in an environment that's not normal. If you're in control of the situation, you're going to create a safe environment for yourself and for marine life. So, proper training, pretty much. And
Because how much money have you spent in training?
A lot.
Me too.
But it's worth every penny.
Yeah.
Every penny.
Yeah.
Mm. From every point of view, from a dive point of view, photography especially.
Yeah, because it's the base of everything, right?
It's where it all starts. And that comes from good training and... Yeah,
all those people that ask about how can I get deeper, how can I dive longer, how can I stop going through my air so quick?
Training.
Buoyancy.
Yeah.
Training. Yeah. Buoyancy.
Totally.
Yeah.
And then repetition, practice,
Yeah. And we've got to give a bit of a shout out to Raid for that thing as well, because they excuse me, I don't know if you realise, but it was RAID that forced the rest of the industry to put people into neutral buoyancy for open water courses.
Go RAID?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because PADI at least has changed a little bit the standards. So I think it just the instructors need to follow.
Exactly. Yeah. Only as good as the instruction you're given.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. What are your top five bucket list destinations?
Well, for me, Socorro was one of them, so I'm ticking that one off. I've done tons of my buckets.
Wait, are these ones that we've done or ones that we want to do?
They can be ones that you've done or ones that you want to do, but if you've got your dream list,
okay.
Like I in my top five, I know that Galapagos is there and I've been there already, but it's still going to stay in the top five.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would say as well that cold water, so, you know, Canada and the rigs. Hey, Sydney is freezing. I'm a dry suit person in Cuba.
Yeah.
But cold water stuff really, really attracts me. And obviously Antarctica as well is in the bucket. Some of the sardine runs, big animals at the moment. I'm very much into big animals and I've done quite a few of my bucket list. Yeah.
Did you listen to Don talking about the southern right whales?
And finally, now we were talking about that today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be a really good one to get on.
Yeah.
But clearly, you've got to get some credibility behind you before you can even
so
go.
So that's
and do
the
it.
Thing, you know, like imagine telling people, come with me to this trip that I've got no idea about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't be done.
Mm.
So, more?
Well, it's that I've done quite a few of them, but for me at the moment, you know, big animals, cold water diving and wrecks, you know, I'm out.
Destinations. Let's narrow it down.
Yeah. So
rattle them off.
Yeah. Great Lakes.
Okay.
Yeah. Great Lakes. Those are some of the mines that you can see in Europe. Mm-hmm. A little bit more of the deeper, as in what I mean, deeper, not down, but in.
Yep.
The cenotes and some of the, like, Sardine Run is kind of up there. Antarctica, North Pole. Diving under the icebergs. So there's still so much. Yeah. It's a very, very long bucket list. Yeah.
What about you, Talia?
Antarctica. Definitely one of them. Mm-hmm. Truk. Mm-hmm. Haven't done that yet. Maldives was one that I've already ticked off, but I'd do it again because it was that epic.
Yeah.
Yeah. PNG.
Yeah.
Really?
That's very cool.
You've not been there yet?
No. I mean, I've only been diving 7 years, so.
Fair.
Raja is a major favorite of mine and I'm going there end of the year for the second time, so that was and still is a bucket list item. I don't know. Fiji. I want to do Fiji.
You know what we should do, thinking about it, we should think about doing a little collab.
Okay.
I had Dan Johnson on the show not so long back and he's the co-owner of MV Oceana up in Papua New Guinea.
Yep.
And we discussed going kind of off the charts and doing some exploratory stuff for a week.
Rex?
Next year.
Or
not so much Rex, but stuff in the Bismarck Sea.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because I've been to PNG, but I've done kind of more of the common thing and some planes, but just more of the...
You do the blackjack?
Remember.
It's down 48 meters.
No, maximum wind was 40. So it was a little plane.
This is Sean keeps talking about the blackjack.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Have a look on YouTube and just punch in blackjack and you'll find my video.
Oh.
Oh, you've done it.
Lots.
Yeah.
I lived in Tufi for a year. So
okay.
We used to go down to the blackjack quite often. Yeah. It's good. Mm. Really good.
I'd be very interested in that.
Oh, just dead sexy. The next time I go to Tufi. I did it. The last one I did was 2018, December 2018. Took a load of guests and we stayed for 2 weeks. And we did the blackjack, and it's a long run down from Tufi. It's like four and a half hours on the boat just to get there, and then the same back, obviously. So next time we're going to do it, we're going to go down on the boat, but stay overnight on the beach because you've got Boga Boga Village there. And amazing people, stunning location. Mm. And they're more than happy for us to pitch a load of tents and you know, crash out on the boat and crash out on the beach and have a barbecue or that kind of thing and then dive it the next day.
We need electricity. We need to charge our cameras and strobes.
Ah, true. How do you do that?
That's very important.
Oy, oy, oy.
Solar panels or
I was going to say, we might need to invest.
Yeah, solar panels it is. Here we go.
That's why it's an expedition. Yeah, it's right? Off the charts.
Yeah. I like that.
Okay. How would you describe the dive community to a non-diver?
What we were saying?
We were talking about this in the car on the way over here. It's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clicky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Crazy ass.
Yep. Close. Supportive.
Yeah. And mainly because if you think about it, most of us, the only thing that we have in common is water.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
So then you have people coming from all sides. I always think if it wasn't because of diving, and this can be in every single other sport, of course, I meet people that I would have never met in a standard office situation, you know, because usually in the office, most people do the same thing. But yeah, in diving, you just get to meet so many people. And, you know, I also hear tons of why do you actually want to be under the water? And it's people that like being under the water that get it.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, I think it's an interesting one because any sport around the world, you've got commonality.
Mm.
So footballers, their common theme is football. Rugby players, rugby. Scuba diving. But when you look at a footballer or a rugby player, they've got a certain level of fitness and they're a certain kind of person that plays that particular sport. With diving, there's no particular person, no particular level of fitness. Just a passion for the sport.
Mm, 100%.
And, you know, just picking up on what you said there, Vanessa, I mean, there's so many people I've met in the dive industry that I think, on first look, you'd think that, I'm not going to get on with that person. And they end up being your best buddy for a week or two. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, and the connections that I've met people that I still cherish, you know. And I will always remember my very, very good friend, Erica, in WA. And first time I taught her how to dive in 2010 or 11 or whatever. And I used to ask my students, you know, why are you doing this? Why? Oh, I'm just a tropical diver. What we did to that poor woman, you know, we just took her everywhere. And she always used to say, but I said tropical. I said, I know, Erica, I know, but just trust the process. And, you know, we've taken her to gold trail. She's done, twin diving, dry suit. We've taken her on all type of trips. And I always tell her, remember you were a tropical diver? Yeah, I know. So, yeah, it's once the bug hits you, right? It's
The bag or the bug?
The bug, sorry. B-U-G. No plastic bags, people.
Good on you. Well, ladies, I reckon we should wrap it up.
Thank you.
Are you getting hungry?
A little bit. Oh, I'm always hungry.
Should we grab a bit of pizza downstairs before he shuts up? We've got about half an hour.
Yeah.
Or pasta. He's just made a big
pasta. He said that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool beans. Well, it's been lovely having you here in the studio.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And thanks for bringing beers in. I think there's one more left for you.
That was Talia. I finished anything.
Oh, have you? Well done.
I had three. It's only a day. It's only three.
Tip top. Okay. Guys, girls, ladies and gents, if you want to find out more from Talia and Vanessa, then just look in the show notes. We'll put some links in there. For now, thanks for listening to the show.
Thank you.
And we'll see you again.
Thank you. Bye.
See ya.
This is Scuba Goat Under the Sea, the podcast for the inquisitive diver.